Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th day of February, Anno Domini 2019, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. This is not pre-recorded, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Before we do the news, let us all acknowledge... No.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Let us all acknowledge Steve Ray, who did yeoman service last week, getting me on from home onto both the live stream and the air. He did that with approximately zero notice and did an amazing job. And I think we just need to acknowledge that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, to the news. Robin? Microsoft will charge as much as $200 per Windows 7 PC to actually $350 to deliver a year's worth of OS security updates after it officially retired in January. Windows 7 extended security updates, which will add security support through January 2023, was announced in September of 2018. At the time, Microsoft said the add-on support would be sold on a per-device basis and in one-year increments for up to 3 years. Although the company admits the prices will increase each year, Microsoft did not reveal Windows 7 extended security updates costs. However, a document aimed at partners and the firm's own sales force said prices would double each year. Although the company admits that prices, we believe that the vast majority of customers who need to purchase Windows 7 extended security updates will need only 1 year of coverage, the document said in explaining the jumps. The annual price increases help cover our additional engineering costs of providing the support and are intended to incent customers to continue their momentum on Windows 10 deployments. But while the Word document contained a price list, it was blank. This is my favorite part.
Yeah.
It was blank. Only when the document was previewed in macOS or saved in a different format, such as a web page or a PDF, did the list become visible. Good security, Microsoft. Let's keep using Microsoft security. $50 per device for the first year, $100 per device for the second year, and $200 for the per device for the third year. To cover a single Windows 7 PC for 3 years will cost a company $175 if it's already a Windows 10 Enterprise customer, and for those of us who are not, $350 per Windows 7 system.
And many of these companies have dozens, if not hundreds, of systems.
Right. Microsoft has used other incentives to push firms to adopt the more expensive, more capable Windows 10 Enterprise over Pro. The extended security updates pricing is simply another example. Microsoft also spelled out other extended security updates provisions, including requiring companies to pay for preceding years if they jump into coverage on the second or third year. So if you jump in on the third year deciding you'll only pay the $200, oh no, you'll pay the $350.
Because you should have been paying all along.
You should have been paying all along. Man, I'm Italian, and my history is one of extortion. And I'm impressed by this. Also, extended security updates have no minimum purchase requirement, say a bottom-end number of devices to cover. Windows 7 machines will continue to receive support for Office 365 Pro Plus while they're covered by extended security updates, as will Internet Explorer 11. Microsoft has said that extended security updates will be available from multiple volume licensing channels later in the year from official partners or Microsoft's own sales team. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis, would like us to remind you, is Win 7 support to cost up to $350 per PC for 3 more years. And your choices are, well worth every penny. Cheap for a 10-year-old OS. My computer didn't cost that much. might be time to start thinking about considering moving on. And Windows. So far, we have 32 votes, and Windows is the number one choice so far. But I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The first forum, the second forum down is poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 16 Feb 19, Windows 7 support to cost up to $350 per PC for 3 more years. And of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And the biggest thing we're seeing on a lot of comments on these stories is that, well, my Windows 7 is working just fine. Why should I have to pay for this? Well, because it's going to stop working just fine in about a year.
You're not going to be protected. Yep. And the other thing is all these programs are moving forward, and they're not going to be compatible with the older versions of Windows.
That's right.
I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff, you know, just won't take advantage of the feature.
And for the most part, Windows 10 is identical enough to Windows 7 that you wouldn't notice that big of an issue upgrading. The biggest problem is how old is your hardware, and can it support Windows 10? And that's where people are running into problems. Their hardware is just too old. You gotta upgrade your memory. You might have to upgrade your processor. You need a bigger hard drive. So now you're at the point of buying a new computer, and that can be a lot of money.
And you get a Chromebook, and oh, geez, it doesn't cost you a darn thing to yearly update.
Right. To be clear, Windows 7 will continue to work. You will not be supported. You will not get security updates. You will not get any kind of updates. And the minute an exploit comes out that marks Windows 7 or 10 but is backwards compatible with 7,
oh, there you go.
You're hit. You're done.
And there's dozens of security updates every month. You know, we talk about Windows Patch Tuesday, and you know, there's 30 or 40 or 50 updates that get put into a lot of them. Mm. And so those are all vulnerabilities that you will be vulnerable to, I guess. You're vulnerable to vulnerabilities.
Yeah, you might as well just leave the door wide open and let everybody come walking on in, because they're going to be able to.
So you have another year. January 14th, 2020 is when support for Windows 7 officially ends. You've got another year to figure out what you need to upgrade or to look at a new machine.
Yeah, but still, no, I wouldn't wait that long, because, like, it's like, you know, you're working with an old operating system, and a lot of other stuff isn't going to work with it. I mean, some of the, you know, super antivirus malware bytes and everything else, yeah, they work, but not as efficiently as they do under Windows 10.
Right, and we were talking about this earlier, and we're also going to see Windows itself become a subscription service. And people like me, who don't use Windows but support people with Windows, will now have to look at, will I be willing to pay a subscription for Windows so that I can support other people for free?
It's
an interesting question. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question. But the fact is that Microsoft has decided they're not making enough money. And the only way they can get you to give them more money is to make a subscription service. Right now, what they've had to do, of course, was make a new version of Windows every couple of years, although that doesn't work out well, because so many of you skipped 8 entirely and are now skipping 10. You're still using 7. I hear from people who use Windows 95, for pity's sake.
Yeah. People are keeping their computers longer, so you're not paying for a new version of Windows with the new computer.
Right, and so they have no way to get more money out of you except to start charging you yearly for the privilege of running Windows.
I had somebody call me this past week, still running Windows XP.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I told you a couple
and
weeks ago.
And they go, well, you know, it's still working good for me, but, you know, it's getting infected. I go, yeah.
Yeah.
I says, and it's going to continue. Well, can't you clean it up? I said, yeah, I can clean it up, but you know what? 10-1 odds, by the time you get it home, get onto the internet and everything else, it's going to be getting infected again.
That's right. So bring it back in.
So, you know,
that's like a subscription service for you.
Yeah. Just leave it here for me, you know, and I'll just constantly, you know, get hooked up, clean it up, cook it up, and I keep charging you.
That's exactly right. I have said this for decades. God bless Bill Gates, because without him, I'd still just be an out-of-work actor.
It started my whole career.
But it really is getting to the point where, and Microsoft will start taking down, we've seen this before. Microsoft will start taking down the support documents for Windows 7 starting in January. They don't have to. Disk space is minimal. But that's not the point. The point is they don't want you on Windows 7 anymore. So not only will Microsoft not be able to support you, people like us won't be as easily able to support you simply because that stuff is going to be gone.
There's too many holes in it. It's got more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
That's right. And so you need to be aware that your stubborn desire to remain on Windows 7 is admirable, but is no longer viable. That's simple enough.
And it doesn't mean you have to pay for Windows 10. You can install Chromium, Chrome OS, Neverware.
Right.
Yep. Or you can get a Chromebook, which are often much less expensive than even the cheapest laptop, a Windows laptop, and can do 99% of what you need done because it's mostly web and mail people do.
Right.
And even web apps. Yeah, even web apps can do things that you do with standalone.
And now the Chromebook can do one feature that I love.
You know, your face lit up. And I told you about that.
Yep. Now I can go anywhere. I mean, I could be in the middle of nowhere. As long as I got cell service, I just turn my phone, go over to my phone, turn on tethering. Boom! I'm connected.
You're connected, and you're on, and you're in, and you can do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
People are becoming more aware of Chromebooks, more aware of Linux, the free stuff. You can throw something along the lines of Linux, a version of Linux on an old machine, and get perfectly good use out of it. You can, if you don't want to go to Google Docs or iWork or Office. Online, whatever they're calling it this week, you can run LibreOffice, and it all works perfectly well. But it's hard, cloud ready. It's hard to change, and I get that. Change stinks. We all know that, but it really isn't as bad as you think it is. There are, as we've talked about this before, there are versions of Linux that look exactly like Windows. There are versions of Linux that look exactly like the Mac OS.
Because they know people don't like to change, and so they make it look the same.
Right, right. And we put those online at some point. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can do. And as Steve said, there's the Neverware company has a product called Cloud Ready that turns old PCs into Chromebooks, essentially. And those sorts of things are really... they're free to begin with. They're easy to put on an old machine, and they work every day without having to pay the Microsoft tax. So, I don't know why. It's just a reluctance to change, and I get that. I'm old. I don't like to change either, but it is what it is. All right, we should probably go to the phones. Poor Richard's been holding for a while. Richard from Rochester, what's up?
Hi, I was listening to you there and just thinking how happy I was that I switched to a Mac and I don't have to worry about that stuff. But here's my question. I've been limping along nicely with a 2009 MacBook Pro, but I've gotten to the point where some of the applications I want to use won't run on the 10.13. So I went out and bought a 2011 13-inch MacBook Pro on Craigslist for next to nothing. And that's got High Sierra. And here's my question. I have other software for I run a little CNC machine, and that my CAD/CAM software will not run on the new higher OS. So can I run both 10.13 and 10.8 on this machine?
It's tricky to run dual OS, but yes, you can. You can partition your hard drive and dual boot to be able to run two different OSs. But one of the things that we often see is people just keep the old computer running the old OS to connect to the old hardware. And that is one of the legitimate and often demanding reasons to keep an old computer is to run the old hardware.
Right, right. I want to go back to 10.8. I've got, I don't know what I have on this thing, 10, I've got El Capitan. I want to be able to run the Adobe Creative Suite without and get CS6, which is the last one that you can actually own, because I'm tired of paying $35 a month for the cloud stuff. I'm on a very strict budget. So I could do that. I mean, I'd rather have it both on one machine.
Yeah. It's just a little inconvenient of needing to reboot between machines to go to the different OSs. There are virtual machine products, Parallels Desktop, VMware Fusion, and Oracle's the free one.
VirtualBox.
VirtualBox, yes. But the macOS is not licensed for a virtual machine.
Oh, I see, because I have Parallels on my old machine. I'm running, I can't remember, it's probably Windows 7.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest ways to run Windows on your Mac.
Yeah.
Is to run it as a virtual machine. But a dual boot is no problem.
Okay, well, I would try that. Can I just find that information online?
Pretty much, yeah. You go into Disk Utility, and you can partition your drive into two partitions. And then you boot the run the installer and install the old OS on the second partition.
Okay. And where am I going to find 10.8?
Oh, you have to already have it.
No, I don't, because I upgraded from mine originally probably had 10.8.
Yeah, so you need the installer that it originally came with.
I bought everything used, so I don't have any disks at all.
No, they're supposed to include the disk. That's part of the license. So the short answer is you can't find it legally anywhere.
Oh.
I've seen there's 10.11 is available on the App Store if you find the link. Because when a computer gets to the age where it won't run the latest OS, Apple makes the older OSs available, but it's harder to find.
Right.
And 10.11 is the oldest one I've seen on the App Store.
Okay. So I'll have to go into the dark.
But if you copy the OS from your old machine as the second partition, that would work too.
Okay.
Because then you're transferring that license.
I'd have to downgrade my old machine back down to 10.8. Because right now I'm running 10.11. It's all very confusing.
Well, you would still need the 10.8 installer then. And if you don't have the 10.8 installer, you're...
I wonder if I do. Okay. And one last question. I'm putting...
I'm sorry, before you move on. If you purchased 10.8 from the App Store at any given point, it will be in your App Store history.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
And I buy all my machines used, and very often the disks aren't with them. Pretty much where I'm at on this. I want to put a new drive in. I bought a 500 gigabyte solid state drive, and in this 2011, is there any reason for me to transfer? There's hardly anything on that computer. Is there any reason to transfer that, or just put the new drive in and then just re-enter the operating system?
Yeah, just transfer whatever you want. Yeah, if there's nothing that you want transferred, then you don't need to.
Yeah, this stuff's all going to have to come out of my 29 machine.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure, no problem. There is a possible option. Apple has an internet boot recovery option where you actually boot your computer over the internet. It's kind of cool. And if you hold down Command Option R while you're booting, it will may give you the original OS that came with that computer. Normally, it gives you the current OS that will run on that computer. With Command Option R, but you may be able to get the original OS that came on the computer. So it is still available from Apple's internet server for the very old computers, but generally speaking, most of the computers can run at least 10.11, and so that's the oldest of the OSs that they make available.
That makes sense. To the phones, our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Hi, Gary, what's up?
Hi, I have two questions about a problem I ran into with a Windows 10 laptop. It's a 7-year-old laptop. It's an Asus K54C that I bought from Enright Computer, and it's worked great. It was a Windows 7 machine that I upgraded when the so-called free upgrade came, which will soon be a subscription service. And I recently turned on the computer earlier in the week and tried to get some of my apps going. They're all things that I'd downloaded. For instance, LibreOffice, Malwarebytes, Super Sure. and Spyware, and so on. And I got this screen for all of them, and I'll just read it off to you. The item referred to by the shortcut cannot be accessed. You may not have the appropriate permission. What I did after that, I tried just a few things I knew how to do, and eventually just uninstalled everything that didn't work where I got that screen, went online, and reinstalled all of them. I ran the security tango both offline and then online. I did the whole thing, and the computer ran a little better, but I still kept getting that screen on all those programs. And they did work, pardon me. But there's one that I'm trying to download that I keep getting a different answer with the installer, and that's LibreOffice. The first question is there a simple way, or what was the error when I got that screen that said the item referred to by the shortcut cannot be accessed, when the day before all of these programs had worked?
Well, it could be any one of a number of reasons. When you're running a 7-year-old machine,
yeah.
My first assumption is that there's an issue with the hard drive.
Oh.
And that where the spot where you had kept that, there's a file that keeps what's called the associations.
Mm-hmm.
And if that file has become corrupted, then none of the shortcuts will work.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're looking at a 7-year-old machine, the likelihood that something is beginning to go is pretty high.
Yeah.
Particularly when you've upgraded from Windows 7 to Windows 10. One of the things I might suggest is that you run a program called CCleaner.
Yes, I did do that, and the computer ran a little better after that. It did run better also after the security tango, even though it didn't spot any particular malware or viruses. It did run better, and running it after CCleaner, it worked better, too.
Yeah, one of the things that CCleaner does is it goes into the Windows registry and moves invalid entries and dead programs and et cetera from the registry,
right?
Which makes it run much better.
Yeah.
The problem is that it's not a universal fix. Again, we come to the issue of it's a 7-year-old computer. Can you hold on the line, please? We have to take a break.
Yes, I'll hang on.
Thanks. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gary from Rochester, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we are talking to Gary from Rochester. You there, Gary?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, are you running Bitdefender by any chance?
I'm sorry, am I running what?
Bitdefender as your antivirus program.
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
stop it.
Okay.
It's being overly aggressive.
It is being overly aggressive, and it is killing your shortcuts.
Oh, my God.
This is actually a known problem with Bitdefender, and the way you fix it is stop using it and go to something like Avast or, you know, any one of 100 others. It seems to be a well-known issue with Bitdefender.
Okay. Wow, that was simple.
Yeah.
And you were so subtle in telling them.
Stop using it.
Stop it.
Well, what I actually meant was turn it off and reboot and see if the problem goes away. But yeah, stop. If that works, stop using it. Just go on to some other antivirus program. And of course, at the Security Tango, there's a bunch of them listed.
Yes, there are. Can I go on to the second question? Maybe getting rid of Bitdefender would solve that one too.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was able to download everything but LibreOffice, and I've got the installer, and it goes to a certain point, and it will, and I get this screen that says I've got error number 1317. An error occurred while attempting to create the directory /program/files/libreoffice/share/autotext. And this is version of LibreOffice 6.1.5.2.
Yeah, this is pretty much the same issue. You need specific permissions to create that and write into that folder, and Bitdefender something. And in this case, I'm sure it's Bitdefender is preventing you from taking ownership of that directory in order to create that file.
In fact, most installers recommend you turn off your antivirus to do the install.
Yeah.
Because it's tricky for the AV program to know a good install from a bad install.
Right.
Yeah.
Just don't forget to turn it back on again.
Right.
Okay. Well, I'll get rid of Bitdefender and try that and help. And if that doesn't work, I'll stop the other. When you say antivirus programs, do you mean all of them, like Malwarebytes and?
Well, yes. When you're doing an install, you should turn all of those off. But, you know, what I do is, because I'm getting older now, I write them all down as I turn them off so I know to turn them all back on again.
Yes. Well, I'm 10 years older than you are, so I have to write down where my bedroom is.
So, yeah, right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Been there. I went into a room the other day and remembered why I went in there.
It was
the bathroom.
Oh, that's a day-by-day thing. Yeah.
At any rate, do that and see what happens.
Yeah, and I'll keep backing this computer up, and I've got to start shopping. I mean,
it is time.
It's on the way out.
Yeah, it is. It's 7 years. It owes you nothing.
It owes me nothing.
It's done good
it's
work.
Great. And you guys are great. How did you figure that out, Bitdefender? Just because you knew it?
Well, it's a combination of Google, looking things up on Google and knowing what to look for, because I've been doing this since 1970.
Since SHIP was up.
Yeah.
Since the Stone Age.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Gary. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
My Google foo has always been strong.
Mine too.
But last week we had a weird problem at the store, where there's a feature in the Mac called sticky keys.
Yeah.
Windows has it too, for people with limited hand mobility, that will allow you to basically you can press, like, you want to do Command S to save. You press the Command once, and then you press the S once, and so you don't have to hold two keys together. And on this computer we were working on, that feature was on, and we couldn't turn it off. We go into the settings, and it is off, but it makes a noise when you turn it on. And every time you reboot it, it turned on. And then we went into the settings, and it wasn't on. And so we couldn't figure this out. One of the other kids, one of our younger guys, found it that the login window has separate settings for accessibility
than everything else.
Because each user account has its own accessibility settings. So one user might want them on, another user might
want them off. Yeah.
So on the login window, there's even separate settings. And on the login window, it was on. And so then we're remarking that when you first turn on a brand new Mac, and if you let it sit there a minute before clicking, Siri comes on and says, you know, welcome to Mac. And if you want to learn how to use accessibility settings and voiceover, press these keys. And we just ignore it because we don't want to learn any of that.
Right, right, right.
That was the key we needed to hit.
Yeah.
So somehow that feature got turned on just for the login window, and it was really annoying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But really, most of Google Foo is knowing how to ask the question. It's very Socratic. Right. Platonic. Knowing how to ask the question.
And the trick was he added login window to his search, because yep. I was doing, Sticky Keys turns itself on.
Right.
After boot. And the key was login.
Login window. So now that kid needs to be flogged and fired.
Yeah.
Clearly. Can't have smarter kids than you working there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mario from Gates, New York. Hi, Mario. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I wonder if you could tell me, I am unable to attach a Google document to an email. I can't find the document or Google Docs or anything. And I've asked a ton of people. Nobody knows.
All right. There's two ways to do this. Google Docs, because it is an online thing, is kind of separate. What is your email program?
It's Yahoo or Gmail, either one.
Yeah, Gmail should be easier. But in any case, one of the things you can do is email a document right from inside Google Docs.
Well, I was trying to when I'm in. Oh, right from Google Docs.
Yeah.
You go to the file menu and choose email as attachment.
Right.
Oh, okay. I see. File. Oh, okay. Right from Google Docs.
Yeah. And that way it's much easier. You already have Google Gmail. You have Gmail. So you should find that your contacts have moved over. But you may need to type in an actual address the first time.
Right.
Each time. But the point is, file, email as attachment, and bang, off it goes. You can pick a Google Doc or whatever. You can pick a type, so you can attach it as a PDF or a Microsoft Word or whatever.
Sure. Okay.
And then you can type in multiple email addresses. You can change the. The subject that comes up is the title of the document, but you can change that, and you can also add a message. It's basically Gmail.
Oh, okay. All right, so it's file.
Yeah, under file, it's email as attachment.
Okay.
It's about the sixth thing down.
And when you're already in Gmail and creating a message, don't use the attach icon that looks like the paperclip.
Right, no.
You want to use insert files from Drive, the little triangle-y icon. And then it looks at your Google Docs, looking at a file on your computer.
I see. Okay. Well, that helps me out a lot, gentlemen.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, that works whether you're on a PC, a Mac, a Chromebook, Linux, your phone. I don't care where you are.
All web-based. Now, the trick is if you're trying to attach a Google Doc to a message in an email program.
Like AOL
or Thunderbird, then that's trickier.
Then you have to download it to your machine first and attach it from there.
Right.
But in his particular case, it's really all the same.
If you're using Google Docs, you've got Google Gmail. So that's usually the easiest way just to do it.
Right. So it's actually pretty easy to manage those things. They are all connected. One of the nice things about Google is all its programs are connected. So when I go to email an attachment, if that person is already in my contacts list, all I have to do is start typing the name and the suggestions all pop up. Yep. So that's another thing Google does really well.
See, the nice thing about Google is all their apps are connected, and the bad thing about Google is all their apps are connected.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But, yeah, so, if you live inside the Google ecosystem or the Microsoft ecosystem or the Apple ecosystem, all of the things are connected, and it makes it easier to do all the stuff that you want to do.
No, hold on. It didn't.
Oh, all right.
Didn't work.
Yeah. Didn't work.
Too many buttons.
Okay, whoever just called in needs to recall in.
Yeah, Andy. Again. Yeah,
stuff happens.
Good old system here.
So, Andy, call back, and we'll try to hang up on you. I mean, we'll try to take your call this time. We'll see what happens. Here we go. Dun, da, da. Andy?
Yes.
There you are. How are you?
I'm doing well. I actually had you up on the YouTube on the big screen, but that was scary.
That's a frightening thing. I understand.
Yeah, I had someone this morning ask me if we're still on TV, and I said, well, sort of. We're on YouTube, and you can put it on your TV.
So what's up?
I have a Chromebook question for you.
Yeah.
I got this note from Google that said I had to take Google Plus photos off because they were making Google Plus go away.
And so
I went down into the launcher, and I opened it up, and I had a Google Plus down there. Now, when I go on my Chrome screen and I look at the little icon with the nine boxes on it and open it up, that one just says Google Photos.
Yeah.
But the one in the launcher, it was Google Plus. So I said, okay. So I deleted the Google Plus from the launcher area. I can still get to my photos and everything else, but I can't figure out how to get a Google Photos icon into the launcher. When I go out to the store, it says I'm already installed, so I don't want to hit install again.
Right.
Unless that's the way.
So you want to get it on the launcher? You want to get Google Photos
on the launcher?
On the launcher. Okay, that's actually sort of easy. What you do is you just go. You open up the list of all of your apps.
Okay.
And then you just drag the photo icon down to the launcher bar.
Oh, all right. Hang on.
It's almost too easy.
Almost too easy.
Okay. So I go up here, I open this up, and it shows me all the apps. So then I just clamp on it and drag it down to the bar?
Yeah. And they'll move out of the way so you can put it wherever you want to put it. I mean that in the nicest way.
All right, let's see. I dragged it down there. Let's see if it showed up.
You don't need to do that right now, Andy.
Yeah.
It should.
It didn't take it, so I did something wrong. I'll play with it.
You might not have waited long enough for it to let the other icons move out of the way to make a place for it.
Yeah, it's essentially just a drag. So you just need to click and hold, drag it on down. Wait till the stuff moves out of the way. You've got room for it. The other icon should move out of the way to make room, and you're good to go. The other thing that you can do, by the way, Andy, for all those of you who are Google Plus users and want to get your stuff off of Google Plus, you can do Google Takeout. There is a site called takeout.google.com. And once you're logged in, it shows you all of the things that you've got on Google. This used to be called the Data Liberation Front, and I like that name much better. But if you scroll down, you'll see they're all alphabetical. So eventually you'll see the Google Plus stuff, your plus ones, your circles, your communities, and your stream, which is all the data that you had. And so if you turn everything else off and just turn those on, and then hit next, it'll tell you that it will zip all that stuff up, and rather than waiting for it, you can have it send you an email, because it'll be available for 24 hours, and then you go click on that email and open up the link and download your stuff, and then you just quietly wait for Google Plus to just go away. It doesn't matter anymore because you've got all your stuff.
Okay. Yeah, the only thing that I had that's on Google Plus for, and I don't know why, was the photos.
Sure.
Well, Google Photos is separate.
Right. If you have the photos somewhere else, they're going to stay there. Google Photos is not going away. Only Google Plus.
I realize that. And when I hit the white logo before I got rid of it, it was taking me out to the photos.google.com. And when I hit the one that just says Google Photos, are going to the same place. Looks the same way, so. But I just wanted to replace the icon and put it down in the launcher bar. I mean, I can still get to it by going into Chrome and going up there and dropping down the
right.
List
but
of icons.
But like
but
I said,
it
you
was
can...
just nicer to go from the launcher.
Sure.
And I just couldn't figure out how to get that icon down to the launcher.
It's just a click and drag and drop. That's all it is. But it the first couple of times you do it, particularly if you're only using the touchpad. I use two hands. I click with my left hand and drag with my right hand, and that makes it a little easier to do.
Okay, is there a limit to how many icons can be down in that launcher tray?
Yes, and that is as many as you can fit. Once it reaches the, and I don't know what the number is, but partially it depends on the size of your icons, I suppose. But once you reach the end of it, you can't fit more stuff on.
Okay, so right now I've got 2, 4, 5 icons there, and when I drag the photos down there, it goes in there, but then nothing appears, so I may be at the maximum, so we'll have to figure that out.
No, okay. I've got 10 on mine, so no, it's not that at all.
All right. And something else I'm doing wrong. All right, we'll figure it out. All right, I have to get back to a couple of very vocal young ladies here.
Yeah, clearly you do.
We'll talk to you later.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yeah, it's similar on the Mac dock. The more icons you put in there, the smaller they get. But I haven't run into a hard limit. You just keep adding more and more, and then they start scrolling left and right. And
I haven't tried that, but I suspect it's the same.
And it limits its usefulness because now they're not there anymore. They're off to the side.
Right, right.
But if you want to put everything in your dock, you can.
Right. But yeah, so for everybody listening, Google Plus is going away. And you can download everything you've sent there. One of the things that I found most useful was my Google Circles. Because there are people that I want to keep in touch with. And you can do that through takeout.google.com. Turn everything off. Just turn on circles. Download the circle stuff. And it comes down as V cards, which can be inserted into your contacts list. Although, frankly, they should already be there. Again, one of the nice things about Google is that everything is integrated. So anything that was in your contacts, was in your Google Plus contacts is in your contacts. But if you wanted to put them in Thunderbird or Exchange or something else, mm-hmm. You can download them as V cards and insert them into your favorite email program or whatever.
And that's April 2nd is when Google Plus is being discontinued.
Right. They were very smart not to discontinue it April 1st.
Yeah. No one would believe it. The other interesting
Just
thing.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Flickr has decided to limit the free tier to 1,000 photos,
right.
and many of us had more than 1,000 on the free tier. They have extended their deadline to March 12th before they're going to eliminate any photos beyond 1,000. And I almost want to know how they're going to decide which 1,000 are they going to keep.
Yeah, right. Maybe the first 1,000 or the last 1,000?
Yeah, the newest 1,000, the oldest 1,000.
I'd say... probably the most recent would get deleted.
Yeah. So if you have more than 1,000 photos on your free Flickr account, you either need to upgrade to a paid account or remove them by March 12th.
Right. In addition, don't forget that Google Photos is free.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unlimited storage. If you have a Pixel phone, it's unlimited storage no matter what size your photos are. If you have a not a Pixel phone, then you can set it so that all videos are reduced to 16 megapixels. Now, most phones don't do 16 megapixels. Many of them only do 12 megapixels or 13 megapixels. And so, again, it's essentially limitless. And 16 megapixels is very high. But it will also compress videos higher than 1080p to be high def 1080p. It prints, if you leave your photos at 16 megapixels, it prints them in good quality up to 24 by 16 inches. That should be more than enough for anybody since nobody prints photos anymore. They just show them on their phone. 16 megapixels is more than you need for that. So I've got 15,000 photos on Google Photos right now. And I've got more than that because I add more every day. And they just go up there and they live there for free. And I can search them. So I can do a search for red car. And I see all the photos have a red car in them. I can search. When I hit search, I see a strip of all the faces that I have, and I can just click on a face and find all the pictures of my wife or my daughter. It's real easy to do, and it's real convenient, and it's free. Now, there are people who are systematically opposed to Google. This will not work for you because, you know, Google is stealing all your information, yeah, even when you're wearing your tinfoil hat.
They're super paranoid.
And that's fine. You know, paranoids have enemies, too. But for those of you who are not paranoid, Google Photos is a free repository for a gazillion pictures. And again, because of Google Takeout, you can download all those photos and move them somewhere else if you want to. And besides which, you've still got the originals on your phone. You've still got the originals on your computer, wherever else you've put them. It's just a convenient way, because also once they're up there, you can put them into albums. You can share individual pictures or albums with people. So I have an album. Bless you, my son.
Yeah.
I have an album for my cats, and I've shared that with my daughter. So whenever I put up a picture of the cats, I put it in that album. She immediately knows that happened.
How does the cat use the mouse without biting on it?
Cats and mice are very conversant with each other.
Yeah.
cats do mice pretty well, thanks. But yeah, so the point I'm making here is that there a lot of the free quote unquote photo sites are getting less free, but Google, at least to date, is still entirely free with certain restrictions. One of them being 16 megapixels in size. Well, geez and crackers, most people don't have 16 megapixel cameras. So, and you've still got the original on your computer or whatever. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. But don't get excited, because you're going to get the chance to do it again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right, you're going to get a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, and I'm sorry, but a whole other hour of me, Nick Francesco, and of course all of you and your calls and stuff when we come back with the second hour of Sound Bites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Did you forget?
No.
You sure?
I have to. The way the mics are set up, I have to sit too far back now.
Oh, all right. Sorry.
So for some reason, this mic is
extra hot. You have to sit up straight.
Yeah.
Good posture. And in 5 minutes to 6 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. This is a good one. Rival tech giants like Google and Facebook aren't the only companies abusing Apple's enterprise certifications to distribute unapproved apps in the Apple App Store on iOS. Apple's Enterprise Developer Program is intended to facilitate distribution of apps across devices internally within corporations, governments, and other organizations. Apple explicitly forbids its use for any other purpose in its terms of service. That works. But the use of enterprise certificates to distribute pirated versions of popular iOS software like Minecraft, Spotify, and Pokemon Go is definitely on the rise. For example, a free version of Minecraft, which is normally a premium app, is distributed by Tutu App using that method. Another pirate distributor, App Valley, offers a version of the Spotify app with the ads that support Spotify and the music artists stripped completely out. The distributors impersonate legitimate businesses to gain access to Apple's enterprise certification program and tools. They also offer both free versions of their services as well as cheap annual subscriptions that are priced at a point the legitimate services from which they steal could never viably match. Earlier this week, an investigation also discovered a dozen hardcore pornography apps and a dozen real money-making real money gambling apps that escaped Apple's oversight. Like the pirated apps, these apps bypassed Apple's App Store, given that Apple would not have approved them. Apple has been criticized many times in the past for the App Store's stringent app approval policy, and those critics remain. However, others have praised Apple for cracking down on apps that violate user privacy, can be used for bullying or abuse, or spread disinformation. Though the company's track record is not perfect there, it doesn't seem to be for lack of trying. Some competing platforms like Google Play and Android have less stringent approvals and are more permissive still of sideloading apps that could not be distributed in the Google Play Store. In this sense, the App Store and Google Play represent two competing philosophies, and those philosophies may often be deciding factors for users choosing between platforms. Many of Apple's customers choose the platform expecting those policies to be enforced, so companies tend to move aggressively to address loopholes and other problems. And of course, protecting Apple's ability to take a revenue cut on all app transactions is important for the company's business as it relies more and more on services revenue as iPhone sales slow. We've also talked before about the security ramification about loopholes like this. Even when it was Google and Facebook violating Apple's policies, Apple didn't hesitate to pull certification, though it negotiated to reinstate those certifications quickly. But with so many potential abuses by so many possible actors, it looks like Apple will be playing a difficult game of whack-a-mole to enforce its policies while retaining functionality and features for legitimate and compliant enterprise customers. As a first step in these efforts to tackle these abuses, Apple announced this week that it will require developer accounts to use two-factor authentication. We'll have to wait and see if other new actions are coming, but it seems likely. So how safe do you feel using the App Store? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And it's relatively inexpensive to become an Apple developer. It's only $100 to join the developer program. So that has to be worth it when you take the time and effort to develop an application, submit it to the store, trying to do something in violation of the rules or illegal, you know, the gambling sites. Hope it lasts long enough before it gets found and Apple revokes your developer status.
Right.
So did you make enough money in that interim to make it worth the risk?
Right, exactly. All right, to the phones. Our first caller in this hour is Tim from Webster, New York. Hi, Tim, what's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. Back to the subject matter at the top of the last hour. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say we would absolutely love to get away from Microsoft. And maybe Apple's not an option for us just because of cost, but what we would love to pursue Apple too. And we would also love to pursue Linux, but the thing with that, again, I think I speak for a lot of people, is it's just kind of intimidating. It's not something we're familiar with. What would be ideal is if there was something like a downloadable Linux-type thing where people could just install this, and it would be super simple, and we'd be done and be able to accomplish what we want to, getting away from Microsoft. By the way, that Italian extortion joke was really funny.
Thank you.
But you mentioned ChromeWorks, and I said, gee, is that maybe something that can actually be downloaded, so to speak, and give us kind of what we're looking for?
Well, here, let's talk about a couple of different things. With almost every Linux distribution, you can create a live CD or a live thumb drive, and then boot to that, and you will be in Linux.
So you just download that, it creates the flash drive, and then you're running Linux to test with it without affecting your main computer OS at all.
Right. So you reboot it. Instead of booting off your hard drive, you boot off your thumb drive or you boot off your CD drive, and you're now in Linux. Now, the thing you have to remember about doing that is that the system is slow because it is compressed. So every time it needs to do something, it has to uncompress it from the drive. Well, that's fair. You don't have as much storage on those drives as you do on your own hard drive. So that's understandable. And for testing purposes, it's not so bad.
How much storage would you need on that?
Most of that, well, it depends entirely, of course, on the system you use. So, for example, if I were to go to linuxmint.org, is not right, it's linuxmint.com.
There's one called Linux Live USB Creator.
Yeah.
So that's the bigger problem, is there's dozens of different versions of Linux and deciding which one to try.
And very importantly, us knowing exactly which link to go to, if you guys can provide that on the site, that's awesome. Because if we do our own searches, we're going to come across who knows what kind of links.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I get that. I don't know if I'm allowed to toot my own horn here, but on Mastermind Lounge, I do offer a session called Intro to Linux. It's an ISO image. You can make a bootable DVD or a bootable USB stick. And it doesn't tell me how big that has to be. At the moment, I'm sure it's in here somewhere. I'm just not seeing it right now. 64-bit, of course. You can also do 32-bit.
I'd probably, 8 would be enough, but 16 to give yourself a little bit of breathing room.
Right.
Because you're just testing with it. You're not actually doing anything.
Right, and a 16-gig thumb drive is not expensive these days. Even a 32-gig thumb drive, not expensive these days.
Yes. I'm used to getting those for myself. I think I speak for a lot of the audience, Nick, when I say we really would welcome the little self-plug there if it can help us get to where we're trying to go with this.
Yeah, so like I said, mastermindlounge.com, I'm one of the mentors there.
Okay.
And I offer a number of classes, including Intro to Linux.
Fantastic. Okay.
And
looks like this Linux Live is Lili Linux.
If we can make this easier for people, the transition away from Microsoft will be wonderful and easy and deserved.
I don't. There used to be, of course, Lugor, but I don't know that they're around much anymore. They haven't updated their website since 2016, so I'm beginning to think that
maybe they moved to Facebook.
Oh, maybe they did that. I don't know. They think they'd at least put a thing on here saying we're on Facebook. Find us there. But I don't see that anywhere. But at any rate, the point is, yes, thank you. I do offer those classes, and they're all online and blah, 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 blah. So you can take them in your own home without pants on. I don't care. I only see you from the waist up. They are live and interactive, so...
Fantastic. Okay.
There is that. It's not like some of the other things where you just pay for a bunch of YouTube videos, but this is a live interactive system.
Would you say it's relatively, can the most lay people, and fairly fit computer savvy, is it pretty easy?
Yes. Here's the thing. Here's the big thing. We've said this a million times about a million operating systems. It's true of Linux, too. It's like buying a new car. You already know how to drive. You just don't know where the radio is.
Right.
And it's really just a matter of finding the way it works. It's a little frustrating because you're used to maybe the version of Linux you picked has the menu in the upper left corner instead of the lower left corner. Maybe you have to learn that it's called LibreOffice, not Microsoft Office. That sort of thing. But, other than the names and some of the shortcut keys, you're doing all the same stuff.
Right. Okay. How about as far as security goes? And this is like freeware, so it's being kept on top of?
It's all being kept on top of. In point of fact, study after study after study shows that Linux is much more secure than most of the other than any other operating system except Chrome, because it is open source. So is Chrome. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who are looking at it constantly, finding issues and fixing them. And you get little updates, unlike Windows, which updates once a month. You get updates sometimes daily if they find, anytime they find something, they issue an update. Most updates, you click on the link that says update and you just keep on working. Unless, for example, you're in Chrome web browser and the update is for Chrome, it doesn't even impact you.
Okay, and the updates are relatively, as compared to Microsoft's updates, they're easier to handle.
Like I said, it comes up and says, oh, you've got an update. Do you want to install it? You say, sure. And bang, it updates.
I mean, without losing all of your...
You don't have the only reboot if it updates the operating system itself.
Oh, okay, I see.
Right, and so, and you don't even have to. The next time you shut it down and then start it up again, it'll do it. But so, for example, just yesterday, I got an update to Chrome. Well, I had to stop using Chrome in order to do that update. But the day before, I got an update to LibreOffice. That didn't impact me at all. Obviously, if I had a slower machine, it would have slowed me down a little bit because it happens in the background, right?
Right.
But in general, it didn't impact me at all. And then all that happened was when it was done, it just came up and said, you're up to date. I clicked the OK button. I kept on working.
Do you suppose a lot of the third-party vendors know that a lot of people are moving towards this platform?
Many programs are available in Linux versions, and there is a site called alternative2.net.
Right. Yeah, heard that.
And that... You can type in the name of any Windows program, and it will show you alternatives for multiple operating systems. And one of the things you can do, for example, if I do Adobe Illustrator, for example, it comes up and shows a bunch of things, and there's ones for Macs and one for Windows and stuff for Linux like Inkscape and things like that. So you can see all of those there. Inkscape, for example, is free. So you boot into your Linux distribution, you install it, you play with it, you decide what you're going to do.
Can you think of any reasons why this is not a good idea for everybody? What's the advantage to staying with Microsoft?
It's convenient and it's familiar.
Okay, that's it then.
Yeah.
And
we kind of got it. Go ahead.
I said, coincidentally, the Linux workshop of Rochester is happening right now today.
Oh, there you go.
We'll add that to the users group list because it's Carl, which he used to run Lugar, I think.
Yeah.
So that's at Interlock Rochester, which is 1115 East Main Street, happening today from 12 to 4. Happens every third Saturday of the month. I assume they will help you get your Linux questions answered, bring a machine, help you install Linux, and things like that.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for your time, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right. That's I like I said, I've been using Linux for 20 years, and people don't even know that I'm not on Windows when I share documents and things with them. So it's not that big a deal, believe me. Again, it's a matter of the other is more familiar. Inertia is really the reason you stay with what you stay with. That's pretty simple. It's basically inertia.
The 800-pound gorilla.
It's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's what you started with. It's what you know. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Judy from Rush, New York. Hi, Judy. What's up? Hello, Judy. Sorry, Judy.
Let's try again. We have a full phone bank, which is nice, but a little tricky.
Yeah.
And so Dave is frantically pushing buttons to get the next one on.
Okay, is this Judy?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Judy. What's up?
Hi. I am also having a problem downloading an update for LibreOffice. I uninstalled Bitdefender, and then I tried to do the update again, and I get the message, the feature you are trying to use is on a network resource that is unavailable. That's the same message I was getting before. And I noticed this thing started to come into play after one of the last Windows 10 updates.
Huh. When you uninstalled Bitdefender, did you then reboot?
Yes, I did.
Huh. That's not the answer I was hoping for. Judy, can you hang up and call again?
I even used Revo uninstaller too. So
there you go. The reboot should certainly have done the trick. So it's all of okay. I'm wondering if I see that a lot of people have had this problem. It says the installer has insufficient permissions.
Which usually means something is blocking the permission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And what other antivirus program are you running?
There isn't any right now because I just uninstalled it. I thought I was going to install this update before putting in a new antivirus program.
Right. That should certainly have done it. I see that a lot of people are having this problem. It appears to be a Windows 10 problem, and what they're saying is, if you log in as the administrator, it should work. Are you trying to update, or is this a clean install?
This is an update. But actually, up at the top, it says installing LibreOffice 6.0.7.3. So I don't know whether it's decided to do.
Yeah, what they're saying is that what you might want to try is you download the installer and then you double click on it to start the install. What they say is right click on it and choose run as administrator.
Okay.
It might say open as administrator, but I think it says run as administrator. And then it will ask you for your password. And then it should run the install with administrator privileges, which means it should then install.
Okay.
So give that
a
try.
Good. Okay. I will. And just one other thing is that I'm also getting phone calls saying that if I call this 800 number, I'll get a refund for a computer work thing that's out of business. So
no.
That one's back around again.
Yeah, yep. Thanks. Yeah, no, that you already know that's a scam.
We had one of our customers got caught with an old Time Warner phone number. They thought they were calling Time Warner for a problem on their DVR, but Spectrum had discontinued that phone number, and they ended up with this other tech support company who told them to do things on their computer and give them remote access to their computer.
Ooh.
And how does that have anything to do with their DVR?
Right.
But fortunately, before they turned over any money, they figured out it was a scam and hung up. But it was a number they had for Time Warner and called them.
Right. But so because Time Warner
discontinued that number,
somebody jumped right on it.
Yep, the bad guys are grabbing those numbers now.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Good luck. Thanks. Microsoft is making, well, never mind. The point is, if you're having trouble installing something that isn't from Microsoft, here's another thing that I didn't think of, and Judy, of course, is still listening. Look and see if the LibreOffice installer is in the Microsoft Store.
Ah. Then as a Microsoft permitted application, it should
install.
It should install.
Try
better.
That. I haven't tried that. That's a good thought, actually.
Although I kind of doubt it.
I doubt it too, but it can't hurt to look.
Yep.
All right. Our next caller is Dan from Pittsford, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Hey, I have a Mac Pro early 2009, and I've just been upgrading it for years because I work with a lot of video files and image files. And I'm hitting a problem with a firmware update where, based on this OS, or actually it's not the OS, the processor and various other things, I can't get above 4.1. And normally that's not a problem, except now of all things, I can't even upgrade Office or Office 365. And I see there's various patches on the web, but they all look pretty scary. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't install any patch other than directly from Apple. One of the problems is that model, the Mac Pro 2009, can only support System 10.11. And the, I think it was Office 2016, I think even 2019, requires 10.12.
Right.
So the short answer is you can't run the new Office on an old operating system. And so the alternative is to run something other than Microsoft Office, like we've been talking about with LibreOffice or even Apple's iWork suite as well. But that's one of the problems with older computers is you just cannot run a newer OS unless you try to install some unsupported hack to force it on there when it can't run.
Okay.
And that's dangerous.
Yeah. It's interesting that 10.11 was the highest because it is a 64-bit machine. I'm surprised it doesn't go to 10.13. there must be something other that was limiting it.
Right.
Yeah, I'm on El Capitan. I think I can go to Yosemite, but I can't do Mojave.
Yeah, 1011 is El Capitan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the highest version that the 2009 can go to. The 2010 model can go to Mojave. So it's something happened between 2009 and 2010.
So don't mess with the hacks.
You aren't kidding. Don't.
Yeah, unless you don't mind destroying the computer completely, just in case.
Yeah. You're right. Right.
Yeah. But you might be a candidate for one of the new Mac Minis. The latest Mac Mini upgrade. They're all quad processor, and there's a 6-core processor option. You plug in your existing keyboard, mouse, and monitor, and you run into significantly higher performance over the older machines. And so we're seeing a lot of people moving up to the new Mac Minis from the old Mac Pros. If you don't need all,
how much RAM can you put in those?
64 gigs.
Yeah, I'm up to 128. You know, I soup this thing up because of the video stuff I do.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue is adding the extra cards. There is a new Mac Pro coming. We think this year. Because the Mac Pro cylinder that was such a cool design didn't have really any upgrade options. All the upgrades are external. Yeah, you can stick an eGPU on it, but an internal one would be better anyway. So Apple did say they're working on a new modular designed expandable tower, but we'll see what happens when that comes out.
Yeah, I've been following it, but the trash cans, we know it. My Super Mac Pro 2009 is a higher performance.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, that sometimes happens with the older computers. Now, one thing that Apple has been pretty good at is allowing old computers to run new software. So, you know, it's kind of nice a 10-year-old computer is still running. It's only a 2 or 3 year old OS
right.
being able to.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Munich, Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tom from Brighton, New York on the line. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, I've got a problem that ought to be easy to solve, but for some reason I'm blocked. Lately I've gotten these pop-ups coming up in the lower right-hand corner of Chrome. And from what I see on the Internet, you're supposed to be able to find a place where you can disable these under Settings, Advanced. And there should be some option to remove or to block those pop-ups. I don't see it in the listing I'm looking at.
It may not be a pop-up. It may be an extension.
Well, are these things to tell you what sort of pop-ups are they?
Ads for various services. It's like a little square that opens up at the lower right-hand side with an arrow on it, and there are various services that are being promoted or hyped.
Okay, those are not pop-ups that are built into Chrome.
I believe you're right, I think, but somehow, you know, you're right about it, that it might have been an extension. I checked my extensions, and I did remove at least one that I thought was suspicious, but that hasn't made a difference.
Right. What you might need is a pop-up blocker. Now, there's one called uBlock Origin.
Unblock Origin.
uBlock. It's actually microblock. It looks like a U.
Okay.
It's all Greek to me.
It's all Greek to me. U-block origin.
It's a Mu.
It's a Mu block.
Mu block, okay.
U-block origin. And it blocks pop-ups. I use it regularly. We've talked about this many times. I tell people they should use this, and I feel like a hypocrite because I make money from ads. You know, it's the only way I can keep some of my sites running. And if I tell people to block the ads, I don't make any money. But
You can whitelist ads for sites you like. Yeah, the problem is all the malicious and annoying ads that are coming through.
Right. So if you run something like MicroBlock Origin, uBlock, MuBlock Origin, it blocks almost all pop-ups.
But most people, I mean, up until now, I haven't had that utility, and I wasn't getting them until like maybe a week or two ago. So something's gotten onto the system that's allowing these pop-ups to happen.
Yeah. What is your operating system?
Windows 10.
Yeah. It is. It is possible that you have a an app that you installed that has these turned on. Many apps, we just talked about that a few minutes ago, many apps have ride-alongs that unless you specifically say no while you're installing them,
they slide in.
They slide in and add stuff to your system.
And some innocuous apps, you know, like weather apps, install a lot of this crap on the side too.
Last several weeks, I haven't put anything like any apps like that.
Right. But at any rate, try MuBlock Origin. And it looks like a U. If you just look for Block Origin, you should probably find it without any trouble. And Steve's going to put up a link. Is that what's happening here?
Well, I was looking. There's also a way to run Chrome in without extensions to see if it is an extension that is causing the problem.
Well, that's true. Run in incognito mode.
Is that Shift? You launch Chrome while holding down a key.
Control Shift N once your Chrome is open. Starts incognito mode.
Right, but that doesn't block extensions.
Oh, right.
So there is. I think it's Shift launch.
Yeah, it might be.
Stop extension. Safe mode. Here.
But at any rate, give MuBlock Origin a shot and let us know if it works for you.
Thanks for the tip. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Oh, it looks like it doesn't. Chrome doesn't have a safe mode anymore. Incognito mode is as close as you're going to get.
Yeah.
Somebody's your name.
It's you should find it in your list of, you know, when you go to the Microsoft, the little thing in the lower left corner and open it up, you should find an incognito mode version right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Our next caller is Scott from Greece, New York. Hi, Scott. What's up?
I have a tablet problem.
Okay.
And what I did was I got on a Samsung site.
Yeah.
And I talked with a tech there, and this is a tablet, a Samsung tablet 2.7. And what happens with this is when I go to look up something on a web browser, you know, like Yahoo, Bing, or Google.
Yeah.
I keep getting this message saying I can't find the server. But when I go, you know, I use my Wi-Fi, I go into Wi-Fi settings, and it shows I'm connected. And I went as far as to work this out with the tech from Samsung, and I only got just so far with the investigation of it. I was texting back and forth with him, and you know, we tried various approaches to this problem, but it just he even went into remote mode.
Yeah,
and he got into it, and then he checked my browsers. He says, "Yeah, the browsers are working fine," but when I would try to just do a general search, it would just pop up. I mean, like if I use some of the previous websites or just ask Google to look something up, it would show me a list. And if I would tap on sure. any of the contents of the list, bing, it would just say, sorry, or it's a server problem. Server connection problem.
So you can get to Google.
Yep.
And you can search for things, but when you try to select something from the Google list, that's when you get this issue.
Yeah, I got in the phone, I got into the settings, and it didn't matter if it was Bing, Yahoo, or Google. Every time when I would go to search for something, I would go into the search box and I would type in whatever.
Right.
And
okay.
That's when I would see that.
Okay. What's likely happened is you've got a browser hijacker, a search hijacker. There are a number of programs that we were just talking about this with somebody. There are ride-alongs when you install an app. There are other programs that come down, and if you don't say no, they get installed as well. And a number of those are called search hijackers. They essentially take your search, route it through another server so that they get any ad revenue that you might have gotten from that. It's a long and involved process. The point is, a lot of these get taken down, but the app still exists on your machine. So you go to try to get to the site, and it's going to a server that's been taken down, and you get that error message. So what you need to do is figure out in your list of apps on that tablet, somewhere one of those apps has installed this additional program, and that's what your problem is. So you need to figure, and I can't tell you what app that is because there are so many, but you should be able to remove that app and go on from there. Now, if this is an Android machine, you might be able to use this Security Tango to fix that. If you go to Security Tango under Let's Dance, there's the Android Elemand, and it will take you to a program called Lookout. And you install Lookout, and it will do a bunch of searches on your machine to see if there's any problems. It's essentially antivirus for Android.
Yeah, I suggested to this tech, should I do just, there's no information that's really on this tablet. It's my wife's tablet.
Yeah.
And somebody just gave it to her, so it's still this thing can look at things on YouTube, no problem.
Yeah, it's strictly a browser. No, excuse me, it's a search hijacker. The only thing it hijacks is your search.
Okay.
Everything else will be fine, but you've got classic. This is the classic behavior of a search hijacker.
And if there is nothing on the tablet that you need, then erasing it and restoring the factory settings should clear it.
Right. But
yeah, I was thinking about doing a factory reset, and I was starting to work with the tech on that, and he was in remote mode, and it just got too late. Now it was just burned out. Nice is that he sent me the entire conversation to my Gmail, and
perfect.
That, I was like, wow, all I have to do is just call back and pick up the conversation. But I'm thinking to myself, gee, it's in the afternoon. Hey, sound bites.
Yep. Yeah, go for it. Do whatever you need to do. But that is the classic behavior of a search hijacker. So, everything else will work fine. Searches will be hijacked.
Just as a point of interest, which I've had quite a bit of experience with the Samsung tablets, restarting them. Setting them. If you go into the settings and you scroll down, usually on the left hand side, all the way down to the to about the tablet,
about phone.
This is the phone.
I thought you said it was a tablet.
You're talking about the list.
Yeah, no, on the tablet. No, on your tablet. If you go into the settings of the tablet, there's going to be a whole bunch of things on the left hand side that you can see that you can do. If you go scrolling all the way down to the bottom to about tablet.
Yeah.
Select that. That opens up the screen. If you scroll down to the bottom of that, that's where you can select to restore to factory defaults.
Okay, that's in the about.
The about the tablet.
I can just hit reset to factory standards, and I'll just turn the phone light as it was right out of the factory. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, exactly. Now that means you'll have to sign in again, and anything you installed, you'll have to reinstall, but it should wipe out the issue.
Yeah, my wife uses it. She likes it. It's a bigger screen.
Yep.
So sure. I started getting, I know how to play with Androids to a certain extent, but then I run into the glass ceiling, and then it's like, I need help.
Well, this should do it. You've clearly got a search hijacker, and this should fix it.
All right, Nick. You guys are the boss.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks. We appreciate that.
Yep. And a lot of these malware, and especially the search hijackers, are embedding themselves so deeply in the OS, they're getting harder and harder to find. There's some new ones on the Mac coming out that actually use the enterprise profile management features, which allows your company to limit what you can do on your device.
Right.
The malware is installing themselves as a profile and limiting what you can do. So when you try to change the search engine, it just changes it right back.
Yep.
All right, just as a quick one, we just got one in before we leave the show. We got a text in, and it says, my father has a new MacBook and complained about pop-ups. Looked like he had a Chrome homepage and search engine hijack. He also had been tricked into subscribing to a bunch of sites, notifications, and malicious sites. These pushes notify are a new web standard. Google is not doing a good job of locking this down in Chrome. Love the show. Thanks, Aaron from Rochester.
Yep.
Thanks, Aaron. The thing is, what you have to remember is that Google lets you do what you want to do. So does everybody else. So if you specifically say yes to something, Google's going to let you do it.
So they're warning you. So it sounds like he's got a couple of things running. He probably wants to run Malwarebytes to clean up the search hijacker and then reset your homepage. But there are new notification options. You can go to a website, and the website will say, do you want to allow notifications from this website?
And you can say block or allow.
And if you say allow, you're going to get them.
You're going to get them.
So then if you decide you don't want them anymore, you have to go back into your preferences and turn off that allowing of notifications.
You can do that on a per site basis or all of them.
Right. And so it becomes the tricky issue is the browsers are putting up more warnings that something is trying to happen and people aren't reading the messages and they're just hitting yes, 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 yes.
Right.
In fact, we've seen a couple of people where it was a legitimate message that the security certificate on a bank had expired on a Saturday and nobody noticed. And so the big red warning message came up. There's a problem with this site. It might be, malicious. And they hit continue anyway.
Yeah.
They didn't even bother reading it. Just hit continue anyway. They were okay because it was not that critical an issue. But when a site certificate expires and they haven't renewed it yet, that's a little disconcerting.
That's not just and disconcerting. It's bad management, frankly.
It was a big name bank.
Well, yeah. And this is the thing that makes me crazy. I spent most of my life as a systems administrator. And when something like this happens, it insults me professionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 90% of these problems are just bad management. And if you're a bad manager, get out of the way and let somebody else do the job. That's the way it has to be. Just do it. Under settings and advanced privacy and security and notifications on the Chrome browser, settings, advanced privacy and security notifications. You can turn them all off or just block a particular site or allow a particular site and do what you want to do. But Steve is right. Most people never read any of the things they click on. And the bad guys count on that. They bank on you not doing that so that they can get into your system. The same thing with those ride-along programs. They will all say, do you want to also add? And people just go, oh, yeah, I just want to get to my game. Just go ahead and add it. And that causes a problem later on when you suddenly say, well, how did this get here? I never said yes. Yeah, actually you did. You just don't remember doing so. And that's a problem.
And some of the things even want your password. Installing a profile in your computer requires your administrator password. And the password pops up and people just type it in without realizing that's the bad thing getting into the computer. Well, something wants my password. Okay, stop a second. Figure out what that something is. And is that something you really wanted?
Yeah.
So sometimes we try to say, don't install anything you didn't go looking for. But these ride-along programs, you know, you went looking for this program and these two other ones came in too. Read the installation boxes. Look at those check boxes that are checked on by default.
Yeah, don't get click happy.
Right.
Or just get everything from the app stores, which are pretty secure. And as soon as Google, Microsoft, Apple finds a bad app, they remove it.
Right. But you know, you just gotta be more aware. You just gotta take an extra minute. You know, when something comes up and you have to click on something, read it.
Mm-hmm.
It takes an extra 5 seconds. Just go ahead and read
it. And
it
can avoid a lot of, you know, garbage coming in, because nowadays that's what they're looking to do. Attack your machine any which way they can, because that's how they make their money.
Right.
By getting these programs hooked into there that they can grab other information from you or direct you somewhere else that you don't want to go.
Right. And that's the whole thing. Like when you get one of those phone calls and they say, can you hear me? Or are you Mr. Francesco or whatever? The minute you say yes, they record that and they splice that into, would you like to sign up for our $90 a month service? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
Boom. Done.
Your host.
Now you have to prove you said no.
And a lot of the fake tech support are sort of changing their strategies to make it harder to dispute. So if you know the tech support says they cleaned your viruses for $500, and you dispute that charge, the credit card company goes to the other end and says the charge is being disputed. You have to justify it. And then they send the recording of you saying yes. Well, now instead of performing a service, they're selling you a service contract. So it's $500 for a year. You signed up for that. So it's not a disputed charge. It's a service you're buying, which makes it harder to dispute.
Right. All right. That music tells me you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense this week. You've got a bunch of hours left in the day and a whole bunch of week ahead of you, so it's not that big a deal. We want to thank everybody who called in. We want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. You got to call earlier and more often, Chicago style. And we'll be... don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great and Grateful to You That We're Member-Supported, Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.